Why pay more for a separate CoQ10 supplement? Enjoy twice the benefits with SuperBeats Heart Chews Advanced, from the number one doctor, pharmacist, and cardiologist recommended beet brand for heart health support. The new SuperBeats Heart Chews Advanced by Human is now infused with CoQ10. That's essentially like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 ingredients support nitric oxide production, healthy blood pressure, healthy CoQ10 levels, and heart-healthy energy with two tasty chews a day. Plus, SuperBeats Heart Chews Advance are plant-based, so you get heart-healthy energy without stimulants. For a limited time, get a free 30-day supply of SuperBeats Heart Chews on all bundles and 15% off your first order by going to RadioBeats.com and using promo code DEAL. That's RadioBeats.com, code DEAL.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Lookout Landing podcast. I hope you are all staying safe, staying smart, staying healthy. My name is Matthew Robertson. I'm the host of this show. You can find me on Twitter at mroberson22. And today we are running it back for another episode of Why I'm a Mariners Fan with a brand new guest who I'm very excited to talk to. Today we have Wesley Robinson, the press secretary for Pennsylvania State Senator Vincent Hughes. Wesley is formerly of the Washington Post and PennLive.com. But most importantly, for the purposes of today's conversation, Wesley is also a Seattle Mariners fan. So Wesley, how are you doing? And my first question will be, how does a person in Pennsylvania follow the Seattle Mariners?
Well, first off, I'm doing pretty well. Thanks for having me on. I really am. I'm grateful to have this opportunity because I can't listen to every single episode just because of my podcast library and things I have to listen to. But I listen to a lot of the conversations, and I enjoy just kind of like being able to tap in and hear the Mariners in Pennsylvania. So being a Mariners fan in the Eastern time zone is probably one of the worst things that happens in my life. I end up spending about 40 or so nights a year staying up later than I intend to watching baseball, which, you know, it's good because that's my team and I love them, but it's so complicated. And one of the things that's kind of funny is now that I'm a little older and have a steady job and money, like enough money to pay for MLB TV, that makes it a little bit easier. You know, back in the day I'm from Tacoma, but my family moved to Kentucky in 2000. I think it was 2000 or 2001. I can never remember. But so that was, you know, pre-internet. So I would only be able to watch the 116 season, the 2001-116 season, and then all of the other subsequent seasons whenever they would be on ESPN or Fox Sports or something, all the way up until like 2010. So like it's a struggle to be a Mariners fan. You have to work really hard to keep up with the team. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and I feel like specifically for the Mariners, like we Mariners fans don't really need like another challenge or another struggle, you know? So I feel for the people who like can't even watch the games regularly, you know, like you have to, you know, you have all of the things that come with being a Mariners fan, all of the misery, all of the losing. And then it's also like, oh, this game starts at 10 p.m. my time. I'm not going to be able to watch them. Like, do you have a strategy for watching these games? Do you ever like try to do like coffee at night, or like do you have just a, like a way to keep yourself awake and alert, or you just kind of let sleep wash over you towards the end of the games?
No, I'm a person who's always been kind of a night owl and like not good about regulating my sleep. As long as I get like four and a half, five hours a night, I'm good. But you know, so that ends up, there's really no strategy. It's just like, oh, Mariners are playing the Angels tonight. I can guarantee Mike Trout's going to hit a couple home runs and that's going to make the game close. But I also need to like try and get to sleep at some point. So, I mean, occasionally, like if the game's out of hand or if I know I really need to get a lot of sleep, I'll just turn the game on in bed and have no intention of finishing it. And if I do, great. And if I don't, you know, I'm a responsible adult, so I got to go to work the next day.
Right, and falling asleep to the Mariners is kind of a nice, like, simple pleasure in life, because I think for me, a lot of times growing up, I would do that. Like, when I was in middle school or high school, I would just fall asleep to the TV, knowing that the result didn't totally matter. You know, like, the Mariners were bad back then, as they've been for most of their history. So just having them on felt comforting, and then if I fell asleep in, like, the seventh inning, I didn't really care, you know? So I don't know if you have that same feeling where it's like, whatever happens, happens. I'm just here for the entertainment. Like, during bad seasons, I feel like I really detach myself from, like, wins and losses, and it's just nice to have the Mariners, especially this year with all the COVID stuff. Like, it was just so nice to have them, you know?
Well, so during the bad seasons, that's when the games actually end up being the most interesting, because you go to sleep and they're up 7-2, and then you somehow like, how the hell they lose a 5-run lead in the seventh? Like, what happened? And then you go back and watch and you're just like, oh, that's the Mariners. Yep, that's what they do. No bullpen. Kind of is what it is. But it's actually funny that you mentioned falling asleep to them, because like, what sort of really ingratiated me to, or made me like a strong Mariners fan, was I grew up, like I said, in Tacoma. So I listened to them on Cairo 710 all the time. And, you know, like I might be doing something at home or hanging out or whatever, and then, you know, just take a nap, fall asleep to the game or whatever, and wake up and the post game show was on. And Lou Piniella on the post game show was incredible. Like, his post game interviews were like some of the best, because he'd go through like old school baseball, and I miss and talk a lot about the, you know, what his decision making was, why he went to one guy over another. You know, a lot of it was the bullpen guys, and there were some culprits and some heroes in the bullpen that he always had to talk about. And it was one of those things where I really missed that aspect of it, because I wake up now after falling asleep and it's just, your game has ended, you know, the MLB TV screen, as opposed to falling asleep and then waking up to more like some more of what we were talking about and more of what just happened. So that's another adjustment that was really difficult, kind of shifting away from the radio and enjoying baseball that way. But you know, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, though. It is so abrupt when the game ends now, and like sometimes they'll even cut off like the immediate post game reaction, like when it's Brad Adam and he's like talking about what they're going to talk about in the post game show, like even that'll get cut off. And it's one of my bigger like minor like gripes with MLB TV and just streaming in general. It's like, we want the post game show. I know there's probably a million logistic problems there, but like, it's so frustrating when like there's a great game, especially, and like you want to sort of bathe in it, and then it just says the game has ended, and you're like, well, not really. Like, I want to be part of this whole thing and get like the end credits and everything. So I totally know where you're coming from, and I'm glad you mentioned the radio, because this week marks the 10-year anniversary of Dave Niehaus's death. So I was wondering, when did you like, so when you move out of Washington, were you still able to find radio broadcasts or do it through the internet? Like, did you still have Dave Niehaus even after you left the state of Washington?
No, not for the longest. And then by the time I got a consistent way to listen, it was kind of like towards the tail end of his broadcasting career. So it was like, that was one of the things, like, so when we moved to Kentucky, the Reds are the team in, you know, in that region. And I listen to Tom Brenneman a lot, and he's had his issues lately, which is kind of interesting, but also not surprising given where he's from. And, you know, I kind of started to like him as a voice, but I've always would say, because, you know, my mom was just like, well, at least you have something you like. And I was like, but it's not the same. Like, it doesn't matter how great this guy is. It doesn't matter if he's a Hall of Famer or whatever, like, or he's the voice of the Reds, whatever. It's like, it's just like Ken Griffey Jr. Like, we saw him in Louisville a couple of times on rehab assignments whenever he would get injured. We went up to a few games, but it just wasn't the same. It really wasn't the same.
Yeah, so I've been in Washington for pretty much my whole life, except for college, which was in San Diego. And I tried, like, the Padres. I feel like I've always been sort of the Mariners, like, National League cousin. So I was like, this won't be too much of a transition. But it was just so weird, like, not having the rhythms and, like, the sounds, especially, and, like, even the little, like, the scoreboard graphic on the screen is different. Like, everything is different in just enough of a way for you to be like, oh, I wish I was watching the shitty Mariners lose instead of the shitty Padres. And, like, for me, there's not even, like, a, like, for the watching the Padres was baseball, obviously, and, like, it was nice to have baseball, but it made me realize that, like, the thing that I love is all of the minutia. Like, that's kind of, not to bring up the COVID season again, because, like, it was so depressing and I'm trying to flush a lot of it. But, like, not having so many of those things made baseball seem so weird this year. Like, not having the crowd noise or, like, little things like that. Or even, like, when there was a foul ball and, like, watching the fans scramble for it. Like, stuff like that really made me aware of how much, like, non-baseball stuff really comprises the baseball experience for me. So I'm sure, like, with the Reds especially, like, they were kind of a nothing team, for lack of a better word. And, like, the Mariners at least have, like, a sentimental value to you, even though they are also kind of nothing. So it's so hard to, like, replicate the specifics of the baseball team that you love. And I'm sure you've been searching for that for a while, I guess, before MLB TV came along.
Yeah, they were that's the thing. Like, Seattle was nothing, but that was my nothing. So, like, in it being my nothing, like, I always, you know, could say, like, I love this team. I've loved this team for however many years it was at the time. You know, like, it's actually kind of interesting. So, like, getting into how I became a Mariners fan, my dad was in the military. So I was born in Tacoma. We moved to the Presidio and lived on base for 3 or 4 years when I was in early elementary school. And then we moved back to Washington and stayed with my grandma for the summer, and she lived on Beacon Hill, which is, like, one of those, like, it's so random, because a lot of people, like, when you leave Washington, people are like, where are you from? And somebody who's been there will say, oh, well, you know, Tacoma, and they'll know because SeaTac Airport. But otherwise, like, Seattle is the frame of reference for everybody. So I always just, like, Seattle, and then it's like, but I'm, like, 35, 40 minutes south where I'm from. But anyway, so, you know, I was actually watching I had grown up just loving baseball. Like, my dad was in the military and was a recruiter, we always had tickets to go see, like, the A's and the Giants. And, like, my mom always tells me how much I love Dave Dravecki, and, like, I loved Jose Canseco and, like, Matt Williams and all those, like, late 80s, early 90s, like, Bay Area stars. And then we moved back to Seattle. Or to back to Washington, and was in Seattle and was watching a preseason Seahawks game, the year that they went 2-14, and Cortez Kennedy was, like, wreaking havoc in the first quarter, and I was like, wow, this guy's really good. And it's like, well, since we're gonna live here, I should maybe be a fan of all of the teams in this area. And, like, at 7 years old, like, I made the conscious decision to be a Seattle sports fan, and it was super easy with the Mariners, or not the Mariners, the Sonics, because, you know, they had Sean Kemp and Gary Payton, and, like, played flashy, exciting basketball, and, like, you know, that was, like, the heart of the Pacific Northwest. And then football is football, so it wasn't too difficult to be a Seahawks fan, even though they were terrible. But, like, the Mariners, that was the thing that was like, wow, this is rough. We got to do this 162 times a year. And, you know, you learn lots of little things about it. I think baseball is one of those sports that's so great because the season, like, if you follow an entire season just one time, you fall in love with the sport, because there's all kinds of little random anecdotes. Like Chris Bosio was born on April 3rd, just like me. Like, Jay Buhner was born in Louisville. So that was like a connection. He'd always show up in the Courier Journal under local players in Major League Baseball. And it's like those little things are the things that kept me engaged in baseball and like a fan, you know, even in Seattle or in the Seattle area, but then also beyond, because it's just like, wow, there's so much little stuff that's like, that makes baseball what it is.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think you nailed it. Because when you were talking, I was like sitting here nodding, thinking about my own experiences with that. So like for me, I think the watching the whole season part and like falling in love with the things that no one else would notice, for me, that's always like the player on the Mariners that like no one outside of the Northwest has ever heard of. So like the first one ever for me, or one of the first ones ever, was like Brian Hunter, who was on like the late 90s teams playing next to Griffey. I just thought he was really cool, and like watching him made me feel like I knew what I was talking about, you know, because everyone knew Griffey, Edgar, A-Rod, but I was like, oh, I like Brian Hunter, and people were like, what? Who is this child who's like talking to me about Brian Hunter? Or on the 2001 team, I really liked Paul Abbott, and like I knew he wasn't good, but like his record was like 17-4 or something crazy, because he just had the greatest team of all time behind him. And that for me, like that had me hooked. Like I was so in love with knowing everything about the Mariners, and then wanted to learn as much as possible, which kind of led me down the path I'm on today, where like I spend most of my time thinking and writing and talking about the Mariners. And like, not, I feel like with other sports, it's a little harder to do that as well, especially like basketball. You know, you maybe see 12 to 13 guys all year, you know, and some of them are like playing 2 minutes in garbage time. And football, it's almost too much. Like there's too many players to learn, and then you get injuries and cycle new guys through all the time. But with baseball, you can like figure out like, okay, this is the fourth starter, so I know that he's not like expected to do much, but he's gonna be here every fifth day on my TV. I want to like learn about him. I want to have like an opinion about him. And that's exactly how I think baseball super fans are started. Like once you get beyond the superstars and you can talk to people about Paul Abbott or Jose Peñagua or whatever, that's when you're hooked forever. And like those, all those random bullpen guys are now like taking up useful parts of my brain that should go to other things, but instead it's just random names that are like not relevant to anything whatsoever.
Well, do you listen to the Dan Lebatard show with Stu Gatz?
Occasionally, yeah. Not okay. Very often, but I've heard it.
Well, so they always get into like 90s baseball, and like baseball like in general does do that, but like 90s baseball, even if it's like late 90s baseball, there's something about it where it's like random names and random players. Like, you know, like Russ Davis, like why am I thinking about Russ Davis in 2020? But like, that's just kind of the way it works, right? Like it's just guys who played like in your childhood and then played in that era where baseball was still kind of like king, like they just matter differently.
100%. Yeah, I'm going to remember Charles Gibson for the rest of my life. And he wasn't very good. He was just on a good team. And got to,
yeah.
My favorite thing about him was he was a defensive replacement a lot of the time. So like all of his highlights are just him like going all out for balls in the gap and just like throwing his body around. And it was so cool because like I think he knew like this is my only opportunity to play. And like, you know, like you said, Lou Piniella, classic old school guy, like the quickest way to his heart, I feel like, would just be hustle, you know, diving for everything, taking the extra base. And that's exactly what Charles Gibson did. So now I'm like, even as we're talking, like in this exact moment, I'm racking my brain for all of my favorite Charles Gibson memories. And he is a perfect example of someone that like the rest of the country has never given 1 ounce of thought to.
Well, and it's funny that you mention him because like I do remember his career, but then it's also like his name has a P in it. And that's so strange. And that's a
bit.
Yeah,
he's
that's
Gibson,
also,
yeah.
Yeah, that's also a very baseball thing. It's like you remember people because it's like someone just has a different or a weird or an odd name or nickname. Like Chili Davis was like probably like one of the most overrated baseball players in my life. Not to say that he wasn't great or very good, but like he was also just kind of cool because his name was Chili, you know?
Yeah, the Coco Crisp effect, kind of the
yes,
same thing.
Yes. Which didn't work for Milton Bradley.
Oh, yeah, no. I try to think as little about Milton Bradley as possible and as much about Charles Gibson.
Fair. Very fair.
Okay, so I want to go back to the beginning. You've mentioned that you grew up in Tacoma and you've had a couple moves. But specific to the Mariners, like I'm guessing this is early Griffey, but before they're actually good. So, like, what are your first memories of actually watching the Mariners? And you can be as specific as possible because this is the exact audience for it. So, like, when you decided at 7 years old that you were going to be a Mariners fan, who were the guys, like, outside of Griffey and Randy Johnson, I guess, who were the ones that you, like, sort of latched onto?
So, I don't know that I really latched on to any players particularly in the 92 season. Like, I mean, I remember all of those guys and remember all of the players. But I think it was really like later on, like 93, 94, when it really started to click, when it became more than like, I'm a boy, I like sports, I should like this team and I should like these players. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm trying to think of a specific guy, like Dave Valley. Dave Valley is like one of my earlier like memories of like, this is Mariner baseball, or like Harold Reynolds. Like, I remember them, but it really wasn't until like the 94 season that I like became like a super, super fan. And it wasn't because they were good. It was just like, I was like really, really invested. And I think I started to understand who the players were and like why they weren't good and like what sorts of moves they needed to make to be a better team. And I think again, like guys like those little anecdotes of Chris Bosio, like April, he was born on April 3rd too. Like, that's really cool. Like, and those are the sorts of things I started to pick up. I think part of what sort of turned me into like the sort of fan that I am. So as I want to make clear that like, as a Mariners fan, I'm probably like one of the only people who actually likes Alex Rodriguez. Cause I sort of started to understand like how the team worked. You know, like my early memories of Seattle Mariners baseball are Omar Vizquel at shortstop. And, you know, like, I remember asking my dad, like, well, how come little O's not coming back? And then he tried to explain it to me and it just didn't work. I couldn't comprehend it. And like, I think the turnover, and like, then once the team stopped turning over as much, like, that's sort of what made me a fan, like what like really connected with me, because it's like they've been searching and searching and searching. One of my uncles, a great uncle, actually, he died last year. He worked as a janitor for Cairo Radio for like 50 years or something like that. Like, he worked for him for a very, very long time. And he was a huge fan. He used to always go to games and always get tickets and stuff. And we would like, up until like when he died, like, we would always be able to talk baseball and talk about the Mariners. And he was kind of the first person who kind of explained to me, like, this team is not very good. Like, this is what you're getting yourself into. They've never really been worth a damn, but, you know, I've liked them for a long time. I've watched them for a long time. It's something to do. It's entertaining. And then I think once it kind of became like a more of a stable team, 93, 94, 95, like, and it started to take shape around that core, you know, that's when I became a fan. So like, I can say, well, I remember Bobby Ayala blowing saves, or Tino Martinez making picks at first base or whatever, or just the greatness of Griffey, you know, Mike Blauer's coming back from Oakland, did he come back from Oakland at that point, or was that from New York? Well, whatever the case, Mike Bauer's coming on the team and making an impact. Like, that's the sort of stuff that really made me a fan, was just like seeing it all come together after hearing about how terrible this team was over and over and over again.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting too, because I'm looking at the 92 roster now. Like, while you were talking, I pulled it up, and this team should have been way better than they were. Like, on paper, they look like they have, I guess by name recognition, like, every member of the starting lineup is someone that a Mariner fan would recognize. Like, there's Valley, there's Tino Martinez, Harold Reynolds is still there, Vizquel, Edgar was still playing third. and you have Griffey and Buhner. Kevin Mitchell was on the team, which I actually didn't know Kevin Mitchell ever played for the Mariners. And then you have young Brett Boone on the bench. He didn't play very much, but Blowers was there too. Like, this should have been a pretty good team. And I feel like, at least from a personality standpoint, you have a nice sort of introduction to them, because like Griffey is obviously something completely unto himself, but then like Omar Vizquel just making the plays that he was, and Randy Johnson being at that point, I believe, the tallest baseball player ever. Like, there's a lot of cool stuff for a child to latch onto. So even if you didn't like have one guy specifically, I feel like you had a pretty good introduction. But actual question I wanted to ask was, so I guess here, let me back up. When I was introduced to the Mariners, they were good. Like, I was born in 95. So then when I'm a really small child there in the playoffs, and then like in 2001, I'm old enough to like actually understand what's happening. So I'm completely enraptured. Like, I'm obsessed with the Mariners. And I wonder a lot, if they hadn't been good, if I would have dove headfirst into the team the way I did. So do you ever think about like, if the Mariners had been a juggernaut when you first started paying attention, how that might have like shaped your relationship to them? Because I feel like, you know, if you're a Yankees fan or a Cardinals fan, your relationship to baseball is much different. Like, I feel like it's harder to be romantic when you have expectations every year. And like, you know, for Yankees fans, like losing in the first round of the playoffs is a huge disappointment. Whereas the Mariners, like, that is literally the goal right now.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
like,
yeah,
do,
yeah.
Do you, have you ever thought about that? Like, how things would have been different if you had just been born a couple of years later and like the 95 to 97 run is your introduction?
Yeah. So that's an interesting question. I think my personality is kind of somebody who like nerds out on stuff. So like whatever it is that I like I gotta go full in. As an example, like there's my favorite band going right now. Like, I learned about them on a anime I watched, and then like I just dove into their entire catalog, and like, it's just one of those things that just kind of came out of nowhere. So on some level, I think I probably would have still been a fan, but, that actually, so I'm of the age where everyone is like a super Mariners fan because of cool, like Ken Griffey Jr., Randy Johnson, that whole team. But I'm also of the age where like that was my first experience into winning with Seattle, because that was even before the Sonics made the finals and the Seahawks ever did anything. So like, to me, and I say this to people, and like, some people get it, some don't. Like, the 95 season still means more to me than the Seahawks winning the Super Bowl. Like, that was such a, that was such an incredibly seminal moment. Like, and to put into perspective, like, if you were, so you were born in 95, like the Mariners used to have this program, the Junior Mariners. I don't know if they did that when you were a kid, did they?
I'm not aware of it. No, they might have been doing it, but I never heard about it.
So it was like this partnership with McDonald's, and like, you could like, families could get tickets for like five games or something like that for like $70 per person. And like, they weren't the best seats, but like, you'd get like an outfield reserve seat, like a hot dog and a soda, and like, you know, five or seven games or something like that, and then options to buy tickets every now and then. It was like a great marketing way to get people to games. We did it with our church, where we would bring kids and like kind of something to do, spend the day in Seattle, spend in without spending a ton of money. And one of the perks at the end of the 95 season, and there's, my dad has them somewhere in his house. He lives in Olympia still. Is they gave us these like commemorative audio tapes of, and it's like Dave Niehaus, you know, walking you through narrating everything. So it's like turning point, big games that mattered, how the season started, the playoff run, you know, even like Junior scoring, Randy Johnson not being able to deliver, like, and it's like, that's so etched into my mind. I honestly cannot detach my fandom from that, because like, you know, I was 10 when that happened, and like so much of like my, like so much of my memory becomes clear at like 10, 11 years old. So like, it's really hard to say, but that's a good question. I think on some level I still would be that big of a fan, but you know, as I've gotten older, And it's like after losing the Sonics and kind of being detached from the Mariners and Seahawks, like I'm largely as much a fan of individuals as I am franchises. So, you know, like there are certain players I love to watch, certain players that are appointment viewing for me. But for the most part, like the Mariners are like that one franchise where it's like, I like baseball, but like, I don't watch it. I generally don't watch it if it's not like playoffs or the Mariners. So I really wish I could give you a better answer, but I can't.
No, I get it. I mean, there's no, like, it's very hard to talk about like your own experience that you've lived in for so long with like that retrospective view on it, because it is hard to pinpoint for sure. Like, I think everyone who's like this invested in the Mariners, and this is pretty specific to the Mariners as well, because I think with so much of the losing, it all blends together. Like, it feels like we all just kind of woke up one day and we're like, oh yeah, okay, like this is life now. Like, I feel like it really is sort of born into you if you're from this area, like knowing that the Mariners are going to be on every day from March to September, and you don't really have to pay attention, but sometimes they do something cool. And like, the sad part about it is, or I guess maybe the bleak part of it is at the end of the day, it never really matters. So that kind of goes both ways, where it's like you can be fully invested without having to like worry about getting hurt. But also, like, if you want to just check out for a week, it's really easy to do that too. So to me, that's the beauty of the MLB TV era. Like you said, if there's a pitcher who I really like, who I know is pitching that day, I'll be like, okay, I'm going to watch that instead of the Mariners today. And then if the next day there's like a really good matchup, or like if I want to watch, you know, Mike Trout against a pitcher that I like, then I'll watch that instead. And like, it's easy to sort of come in and out of it for me while still keeping like loose connections to the Mariners. Like, there's never a point where I like completely stop, obviously, but I've definitely gone stretches without really paying attention to the Mariners. And I feel like that's the healthiest way to do it too, because of the nature of baseball. And like, watching 162 games of teams that the Mariners have had is probably not the best for anyone's mental health.
No, that's very true. I mean, I think the most stressed I've ever been as a Mariners fan is after 2001 and not really being able to watch them every day, but having to argue like why a team that didn't win the World Series after winning the most games in American League history is still good. And then them winning 93 games 2 years in a row and not making the playoffs. Like, that was one of those things that was like so super stressful, because it's like, for all intents and purposes, like, that's a team that should be good. That's a team that should make a difference, be impactful in the league, and then they're not. And then you're reminded, like, oh, well, it is the Seattle Mariners. So that is what it is.
We have pretty parallel experiences here, but just from different times. So, like, for me, that exact feeling that you described was 2014 to 2016. So like the first year with Cano, where they end up missing the playoffs by one game, and then 2015 they get Nelson Cruz, and I'm like, okay, surely this team will make the playoffs. Like, they expanded the playoffs too, everything was lined up for the Mariners, and I was stressing over it. Like, that was when I was in college too, so I would like make time out of my college schedule to try to watch the Mariners, which is very foolish on the surface. And then I didn't get any payback for it, because they continued to miss the playoffs. And the American League was so wide open at that point too. Like, there really wasn't like a super team. Like, the Royals kept winning the AL, and they were just like scoring 3 runs a game and like stealing bases. Like, every time I watched the Royals in the playoffs, I was like, the Mariners are maybe like equally good on paper as this team. It was so frustrating, and I would get really stressed out about it. And then the end of 2016 was the same thing, where they were still in it, and you knew like, well, this team isn't great, but I would love to just see them in a wild card game. Like, that would really validate this whole experience for me. Mm-hmm. And even that didn't happen. And I was just like, so that was really like a turning point for me, where I had to like reevaluate how much I wanted to do this year in and year out, especially every single day. And it kind of led me to this point I'm at now, where I'm able to sort of separate. But those two, I guess 3 years, 14, 15, and 16, is when I was the most like invested in the everyday happenings of the Mariners. And there was fun points, obviously, like, you got Fernando Rodney was in there, and like some stuff that I did enjoy. But I think at the end of the day, like, if I had been more wizened, I probably wouldn't have, like, fretted too hard about Brad Miller or Dustin Ackley or whoever you want to throw in there.
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely was like, yeah, I was like, whatever. Like, I as that was happening, it's like, I'm going to keep watching, but I know how this story is going to end, and I'm not going to let it get to me, because this is like peak Seattle Mariner. Like, but I think what you hit on specifically about kind of like the college thing and like what trying to work your schedule around it. So I would say, I think of the Pacific Northwest as like this place that people just don't really understand. They've like, cause there's not a lot of reason to go up that way. There isn't a lot happening that like is going to make it that people are going to care about west of the Rockies. So like, one of the things that sort of kept me interested in the Mariners and like made me almost double down was like, I'm so detached from home. Like, I don't really have any ways to connect to people. Mind you, like, this was like early, like, mass internet days. Like, we had AIM or Yahoo Chat or whatever, but like, we didn't have like the ability to video chat and voice chat for free like we do now. So like, you know, if I wanted to call my friends, like, that was like $10, and it's like, you know, my parents had split at that point, so it's like $10 to call your friend, or you just, you know, go play solitaire by yourself on the computer, or, you know, hang out with your brother or sister. Like, that's what they're here for. So like, a lot of that, like, for me, that the team became a lot of my identity at that point. You know, like, I started like wearing baseball hats and Mariners hats all the time, and I had like, at one point I had like 50 something different Mariners hats, like several of the standard like blue with the logo, but then like, you know, just different variations to wear with different outfits so people would know like that, no, that's my team, that's where I'm from. Because if you can imagine, like, as we were moving from Washington to Kentucky, I'm telling people, yeah, like, this is what I think is going to happen and blah blah blah, and they're like, well, why would you move to Kentucky? They don't wear shoes there and they're stupid people, blah blah blah. And it's, you know, high schoolers' minds, that's the way high schoolers think. And then when I moved to Kentucky, they're like, well, do you like ski and snowboard? And I'm like, oh geez, like, are there black people there? The other thing was like, are there black people there? And I'm like, well, yes, there are. Like, it's the very, well, then why do you talk like this, or why do you like baseball? And it's just like,
right,
you know. So it's like, at me, like, being like rebellious teenager, like, I kind of doubled down on that. And then when I got to college and was around people who kind of, you know, I actually started a group on Facebook. I went to the University of Kentucky and started a group on Facebook for Washingtonians, and like was always like searching out people. And like, I was there when Ryan Strebe was there. He played first base, I think most the last stop, I think he was drafted by the Tigers, but he's from he's not from Edmonds, he's not from, where's he from? He's from like the Seattle area, and like, you know, had a little bit of a friendship with him through that. And, you know, I was there when James Paxton was in college, so like, I knew he was good, but then when he gets to the majors, they change his arm slot and he's able to throw 99. I'm like, well, where was that when he was in college, you know? So it was like, I think that's also why it's really hard to detach, like, being a fan from like when I would have been there, because like I've moved around enough to where like, I don't really think of anywhere as home anymore. Like, when I go to Louisville to my mom's, like, that's her house. That's where we use as a home base. But I really have effectively lived there for like a few weeks after high school, then went to college, and then whenever I come back, or, you know, spend time there. So it's like, I think the Mariners are like the most home thing for me. Like, that sounds really weird to say and think about, but like, even as a family, like, my parents are divorced, my family is kind of like functionally dysfunctional. And like, but we can all go to a game together. Like, if we were all in Seattle during the summer, like, we would sit down, all five of us, and just hang out and watch a game, because that's just like the one thing that we can do that like seems to bring peace. So it's yeah, I don't know. I get why you kind of have that relationship, and I get why you kind of have to work yourself out of it, because it does end up being like a serious investment.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Yeah. And the other thing is, like, I do love baseball. Like, I grew up playing baseball and was, mm-hmm. like, you know, for a fairly long time. Like, I was, like, playing travel ball and all that. And I was, like, I love the sport. So, like, that's the other thing is if I start thinking too hard about baseball, I go down all these, like, I'll try to coach from my couch and all that. And I'm, like, I remember, like, watching Dylan Moore once, like, swing at, like, a 92-mile-an-hour fastball right down the middle and miss it. And I said to no one, I was by myself, I'm like, if he can't hit that, he's never going to hit. And turns out I was very wrong, like, as I'm often am. But, like, I have these little opinions that come from playing baseball as a child that I think have carried over to now, which also kind of makes my mind a frustrating place to be. But in your last answer, you said a lot that I totally resonate with. Like, my parents were also divorced, so, like, I remember when I was in high school, when I got a car, I grew up in Sammamish and my dad worked in Seattle. So he would have tickets. He actually like splits season tickets with a friend. So like mm-hmm. there were a lot of times where he would text me and be like, hey, I got tickets tonight. Like drive out to the city and meet me at my office and we'll go to the game. And that made me feel like very grown up at the time, you know, like being 16, driving my car into the big city and like meeting my dad and walking to the stadium. Like that felt very cool. And then at my mom's house, when she got remarried, like that was something that me, her, my sisters and my stepdad would do all the time, was just watch the games from home. Like we probably had the Mariners on every single night, which is just back to that like comfort thing mm-hmm. again. And the being in college, I was wearing so much teal. I didn't have 50 Mariners hats like you, but I was big on, because I couldn't afford a jersey, right? So I was big on the t-shirt jersey or the jersey. So I would wear those all the time. I had a Felix one. I had the Robinson Cano one. I had a Willie Bloomquist one that I got.
Willie Bloomquist.
I got it like at a Mariners team store because you can't get those anywhere else. And I remember when I saw it, I was like, this is so funny. I have to buy it. Because also it's like if you know, you know situations. So, like wearing that around San Diego, if someone mm-hmm. like saw it and mentioned it, I'd be like, okay, yeah, you immediately get where I'm coming from. Like we have this shared connection. And the Mariners are definitely something that to me feels more home than anything else. Like being at the stadium is probably my favorite place to be in the entire world. And that was the other really hard part about this season for me, because now I live in the city. Like it would take me 20 minutes to get to the stadium, and not being able to do that, but knowing that there were games happening there was mm-hmm. a very, very maddening experience. Like all I wanted to do was go watch the games. Even though, like, I'm not saying they should have let fans in, obviously, like they made the right decision, but it was just very strange knowing that there were games happening at Safeco Field, or excuse me, T-Mobile Park, and that I was not allowed to go there.
Yeah, so that's actually funny. Yeah, because like I've been calling it Safeco all year, and it's people are like, what are you talking about? I was like, oh yeah, that's right, they changed the name. And funny enough, like I know how we pulled this. My uncle was a journalist for a long time and always had connections to, you know, the local papers, and he ended up getting us tickets like to the opening series at Safeco Field. So like, yeah, I think it was like right after the All-Star game that it opened or something like that. I just remember being there and like they were playing the Padres, I'm pretty sure. And it was like such a yeah. surreal experience. Like being in that new ballpark after the King Dome for all of those years.
Yeah, I had a giant poster of, like, it was a picture from the very first game, and it was the Padres, I remember, because I, like, in the photo, you can, like, see the scoreboard, and it had the Padres lineup, and I had that memorized at one point for absolutely no reason, but, like, I can still remember some of those names. Like, Eric Owens was a Padres outfielder at the time. Mm-hmm. He was on that team. And I also just thought it was funny that their first game in the new stadium was against a National League team. Like, I just think – I remember thinking as a kid, like, oh, that's weird. And, like, now as an adult, I'm like, that is weird. Like, that is very Mariners that they opened their brand-new stadium not against, like, the Angels or the A's, but against the San Diego Padres.
Well, I'm sure you've seen, like, the Dorktown six-part special on the Mariners, right?
Of course, yes, I have.
Yeah, like, that's, like, everyone, like, I don't, I'm not, like, in the internet culture like I used to be, so I hadn't heard of it, and, like, literally everybody who knows me that knows me as a Mariners fan is, like, you have to watch this. Like, I had 20 people recommend this to me, and I'm, like, so the marketing worked because people know I'm a Mariners fan, but also, like, I probably need to kind of get back into being a more vocal Mariners fan so people understand that, like, so that I'm in, like, those sorts of conversations and get, like, get that information as it happens, because, you know, I didn't know anything about it, and that whole special is just like that whole series or whatever you want to call it is basically like none of this makes sense, but it also makes all the sense in the world because it's the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah, that should have been the tagline. We should send that to them. I'll get my Vox Media connections on the phone and see if I can wriggle my way in there. But the other thing that I wanted to bring up as well, it's on my mind, is like the Safeco Field T-Mobile thing is also very, very Mariners. Like, obviously it is where the Mariners play, but like the fact that people are like, what are you talking about? It's called T-Mobile Park is very funny to me, because like that shows that Safeco Field is not like a national name, you know, like if they change the name of like Wrigley Field, everyone would be like, oh my god, that's huge news. But for Mariners fans, like it was huge news when they changed the name from Safeco Field to T-Mobile, because that was like such a part of our lives, just saying Safeco Field. Some people even call it like the Safe, which I'm not a fan of, but that's not important. And when it got changed, that was like a seismic shift. And then for you to like bring up Safeco, people are like, what are you talking about? I don't know what that is such a reminder that like, oh yeah, the Mariners are kind of a blip on most people's radar.
It's not just that though. Like, so one of the, like, when I was in high school, I used to like make little bets with people on sports all the time. Watching a whole bunch of West Coast sports, like you kind of have an idea of who's better. So in the 2001 year, Washington played Miami in Washington, University of Washington. And they won, what was it, 38-17 or 38-21 or something like that. And I made so much money because everybody's like, oh, the U's going to kill him. And I was like, have you guys seen Washington play? Like, they're a much better team. And that was like just in general, like people don't – like the first – once you get out east, like you start to realize like how little the West Coast actually matters, and like the West Coast is literally boiled down to Los Angeles. Like, that's literally the only thing people think about the West Coast. So, like, it's so weird. It's such a weird, like, different way of viewing the world.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that comes up, too, like, when in, like, that Dorktown thing, or, like, sometimes I'll just, like, be listening to a sports podcast or some sort of sports media where they're talking about Griffey specifically. And, like, for a lot of people, that was, like, truly the introduction to Seattle. Like, most people think of Seattle as like a myth, like not mythical, but like they don't have any sort of grounds for it. Like, it's not based in reality. Like, they don't know where it is. They don't know anything about Washington State. They just knew that that's where the Mariners were, and that's where Ken Griffey played, and they had cool like teal uniforms and played in like a dome, and that's what everyone thought Seattle was. And then now, like, to realize that Seattle is like a major player in like tech and all that, and like it's an up and coming city, is so funny, because like only 25 years ago it was, I don't know anything about it, but I know Ken Griffey's there. And like now I think, I guess there's kids who probably feel that way about Russell Wilson, but it's not like a national thing the way that Griffey was, like, because Griffey had everything. I mean, he was like probably the most marketable athlete of that time outside of Jordan, I guess.
Oh yeah, he was cool. Like, as much as Russell Wilson is good at like sports, like I spend a good amount of time making fun of him on social media because
he's not cool.
He's not cool. But I like that he's not cool, and I like that he embraces the fact that he's not cool, which kind of makes
him cool.
Quarterback
trait as well.
Yes.
It makes me like happy that he's on our team.
Yes, 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 absolutely.
Okay, I wanted to end on a semi-real note. You can be as serious or as silly as you want with this, but when I had Dave Sims on the show, I asked him about being a black man who loves baseball and the reaction that he'll get when he mentions that. Like when he introduces himself to people and tells them, oh, I'm a play-by-play man for the Seattle Mariners, he mentioned that sometimes he gets quizzical looks. You know, the implication is like, oh, I would have expected you to be working in basketball or football or a more traditionally black sport. So with you not only being detached from Seattle, but being a black man who loves the Mariners, I'm sure you just get a bunch of crazy reactions when you tell like strangers or acquaintances how much you care about the Mariners. Is that in line with your experience? Like, is it something that you bring up and get like a lot of sort of puzzlement?
So because I rarely ever get to Seattle, I've been back to the Pacific Northwest, I think 7 times in 20 years or 21 years or however the hell long it's been. I really can't keep track. I'm always going to road games, and I'm not a jersey person, just because like I've been burned by buying jerseys. Last jersey I think I bought was Daryl Jackson, the receiver for the Seahawks, and then like I had to buy I bought Daryl Jackson, then I bought Deion Branch, and then both of them were gone like within a year, and I was just like, okay, this isn't a good investment. So I'm gonna stop doing that. So like I'm always like hat, shirt, jacket, sweatshirt, whatever, like, and I always end up talking to like the know-it-all fans, and it all depends on like, it really all depends on like how it all depends on how that person perceives like the first response to yes, I like baseball. So I was with my sister went to school in Chicago, and I took her, me and my mom took her up to school. This would have been, what is that? Is that 2011? And we went to a White Sox game afterwards. And, you know, I was talking to my mom about something, and I was like, I can't believe such and such happened. And this guy behind us piped in and was like, well, this is why. And I was just like, okay, sir, I know why this happened. I just, like, I was kind of more talking, like, A, to my mother, and, like, in a non, like, baseball fan way, but if we want to go down this path, and like we spent 20 minutes like going back and forth before like I pulled a couple names out of my head about like players who used to be Mariners killers for the White Sox, and then he finally acknowledged that like, oh, you actually know what you're talking about. And it was like a weird experience because my mom, like, I was just thinking he was talking baseball, and my mom was like, I can't believe that guy like tried to like call your knowledge on this. He's like, and I was like, I thought he was just, you know, having a conversation. She's like, no, like there was a point at which it was clear you knew what you were talking about. And there was another sitting in front of us was a woman and her boyfriend, I think. And I guess she had went to college with Sean Kelly. So she was there, like, she didn't know anything about baseball, but she was just there to support her college friend and like, you know, hang out with him afterwards. And she was just like, yeah, no, that guy was definitely racist. And I was like, oh, okay. I didn't even think about it. Like, my natural default is to kind of like, I assume people are going to kind of question that sort of thing. Because I mean, it's true. You look at the demographics of people playing baseball, and that's sort of reflected in the fans. But I think I spent a lot of time with my uncles who really love baseball. And I've always been around a lot of older people who love baseball. And, you know, and I grew up playing too. Like, I wasn't that good, so I stopped playing after high school or in high school. But, you know, it's a tough thing. And I appreciated when you asked Dave Sims that, because, you know, I always like, he's not my favorite. But I recognize some of that is he's following up like a legend, and there's going to be some pushback to that. But I always see people talking about his performance, and it's like, well, he's not that bad. He's not Dave Niehaus, but he's not that bad. And it's like, you can't help but detach. You can't help but, like, recognize that that's what's happening in some cases. So yeah, no, it's it. I'm kind of rambling at this point, but I think I definitely get that a lot, and I definitely have to explain, like, no, I really like baseball. I've liked baseball since I was a little kid, even before I became a Mariners fan. I still like it. It's not even that the game is too slow. Like, I just don't think the game is doing its best to evolve. And you know, like, I've heard a bunch of Tim Anderson interviews, and it's like, man, like, that guy should be the future of baseball. Or even Mike Trout. Like, Mike Trout seems like he enjoys the game and has fun and has no problem with, like, the unwritten rules being broken and whatnot. But, like, it's such a conservative, like, kind of old school way of thinking about things that, like, just really turns people off. And I hope that, like, I hope that if I ever have kids, like, I can share that love of baseball with them. But, you know, it's just so hard when the game and people around the game don't seem to want us in it. You know, I don't know if you experience that at all, or if you think that, like, or how you experience it.
Yeah, I think the main problem is, and this is why representation is so important, is, like, you have their thousands of black kids across this country who grow up like they're, you know, they're a young kid and they decide that they like baseball, they play Little League or whatever, and they enjoy it, and then they turn on their local team and don't see any black people. That's a huge problem. Meanwhile, you know, you could do the same thing for your local NBA or NFL team. It's like, okay, here's my people. Like, and then if you're a kid, the thought that's going to logically follow is, that's the sport that I'm supposed to play. Mm-hmm. So I completely agree with you. There's no issue with the game of baseball. I've always said, if you like baseball, you like baseball. We don't need to change the fabric of the game. The problem is making sure that these kids who like it at a young age don't have that beaten out of them by, you know, old white dudes who are upset about bat flips and chains or Tony La Russa getting hired and things like that. Like, there's so many problems that are because of baseball, and, like, or specifically because of Major League Baseball, the business, and mm-hmm. not the actual game at all. So I agree with you. Like, every time I listen to Tim Anderson or Mookie Betts or Francisco Lindor, Marcus Stroman, anyone who, like, clearly still has that joy and it hasn't left them, they're the ones who need to be carrying the torch. Because I think a lot of these white superstars, and it's not even necessarily their fault, really, but that's what they think they're supposed to do. Like, they think that not showing mm-hmm. any personality or, like, sticking up for their teammates after someone on the other team hits a home run, they think that's their job, and that's what leads to all these annoying conversations about doing things the right way. So if we can get, like, a task force of those guys I mentioned, and, like, Tatis, and what really would help would be a manager also, a manager who's like, I want my players to flip their bats, or, like, we're here to have fun, that would be huge as well. But I don't know if that'll ever happen.
Well, and I was going to say, like, you mentioned manager. So, like, when I was in, like, I went to school initially just kind of not knowing what I wanted to do. And when I started getting into journalism, like, that was like, oh, do I want to be a sports writer? And part of the reason why, like, I balked at being a baseball writer and, like, never really kind of followed through with it is because, like, it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't seem like people are really welcome, or there's not that representation. But then also, I think if I wouldn't have gone maybe the sports writer route, like, how do you get into like, front office work or operations work? And, like, you don't see people of color in those positions either. Or if they are, it's like a former player rather than, like, there's no Jerry DePoto or Bill Bevesi or Jack Zarensic as a black man, right? Like, there isn't someone who just likes the game and maybe has, like, an analytics approach or just a management and understanding of the game approach that you can really point to, other than Kenny Williams, that I can think of in my lifetime. And he's actually a very interesting guy. I met him at a hotel like 10, 12 years ago and talk and had a good laugh about how they fleeced us with the Miguel Olivo trade. and he was like, what do you mean? Just like laughing, you know, and I'm like, you knew exactly, like you knew that wasn't going to work out for us and you knew it would work out for you. And he's like, well, I mean, I'm good at my job, but like that's, those are the sorts of things where, you know, baseball's probably still my favorite sport, but like the NBA is my favorite league. And part of the reason why the NBA is such a great league to me is because Black people are represented at every level. It could be better, yes, but we're represented at every level. And it's like, even though it's kind of stereotypical to expect us to be there, like when it's manifested in the front office and other places, like that's a good feeling. That's a good thing that you want to see. And you can see like a change and a sea change and a concerted effort to making a difference. Whereas with baseball, like baseball just feels like it's okay with it being the way it is. You know, I read a lot of Howard Bryant, and Howard Bryant is like one of the biggest baseball fans and tennis fans too. Like if you ever want to know what's happening during a major and just pop in, like, go follow his Twitter feed. And it's like, you see people reacting to him talking about tennis like he doesn't know anything. And then it's like, this guy is like really, really good and understands what's happening. And it's the same sort of thing. And like, I just hope that one day it can, and one day soon, like some people actually take the steps necessary to make the game what it is. You know, I've had an interesting experience journalistically. Like, there's a book about the Negro Leagues illustrated by Kadir Nelson. He did a recent cover for, was it Vanity Fair? I think it was Vanity Fair, after the George Floyd, stuff. And like, he's a great illustrator, and I talked to him about the sport and like went to the Louisville Slugger Museum and interviewed like Negro League players and like their president, and it was like such a great experience. And it's like, why is that so detached from actual Major League Baseball? Not like, right, you know, they're in the hall, like they've let the players in the Hall of Fame and recognize them, but why is the Black perspective so outsider? Like, why can't that be a part of a larger game and a larger narrative and a larger construct? So yeah, like, yeah, I hope it happens.
I think too, my last thought on this is that they need, if baseball is really gonna like progress at all, they also need to allow Black people and Latino people, people of color at large, they need to allow them to fail. Like, it shouldn't be like Dave Stewart, the former A's pitcher, he was a general manager for the Diamondbacks for 2 years, and no one remembers it because he got fired and then you never heard from him again. And it's like, if he was qualified enough to be a GM, he probably should have gotten other interviews. And obviously, I'm not well-versed in the Diamondbacks. I don't know if he actually was just a terrible general manager. But like, if you're a general manager, you would think you would have at least another interview, or you would hear more about him popping up. Instead, he just disappeared. And if I'm totally wrong, if he just quit on his own or if he wanted out of baseball, that's a whole other thing. But like, so another example of this is like, you, what you said about the NBA is exactly how I feel too. I think they are by far the best sports league going right now. And when the Raptors won in 2019, their GM Masai Ujiri got a lot of credit for it, as he should have. And like, he is from Africa, and like the baseball equivalent of that would probably be like a general manager from the Dominican Republic or Puerto Rico. And like, as far as I know, we've had zero of those. And it's like, that is so crazy to me when you look at the demographic of the sport and how many players would probably want to play for a Latin GM. Like, how has that not happened already? And that's the thing I'm saying, where like, you need to allow them to fail. Like, I think, you know, Ron Washington did cocaine, which is bad, don't do cocaine, but he didn't get a manager job ever again. Meanwhile, Tony La Russa is like 95 years old off a DUI getting a really, really good job that any manager would want. And like, that is exactly what the problem is.
Oh, and to tie up the Dave Stewart loop, I think he is back working with the A's. I remember hearing him doing some work with the team kind of in the response to the virus and then also social justice. I don't know what his capacity is, but that's also Oakland, right? Like, that's a place like with the Raiders where they, you know, Al Davis hired Black coaches before anybody else. And like, it's the blackest part of like Northern California. So like people are they have to reckon with the reality of what's happening there, right? Like it's not like Seattle, where it's like, yeah, black people do live there, but it's largely kind of in the margins, or for lack of a better term, under different circumstances than the like white counterparts in a lot of ways. And right. You know, until a team like that says, hey, look, here's this brilliant young mind who loves baseball, like doesn't matter what color they are. I mean, it matters for representation, but it doesn't matter in terms of who we're hiring. We're going to give this person an opportunity to learn and then also, like you said, fail and figure it out. I think there would be so many more people getting opportunities if, you know, it wasn't one and done across the board. So, no, that's an absolutely excellent point.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, my last question then is going to be back to sort of the general state of the Mariners. I just want to know how you're feeling about the team moving forward. Obviously, we just got the news that Kyle Lewis was the unanimous Rookie of the Year, which is great, and we hear everything about the young prospects coming up. But where are you at heading into 2021, which is just another way of asking, do we trust Jerry Dipoto?
So it's to go back to the last part of the conversation a little bit. It's so amazing that the Mariners have like the blackest team in baseball.
I know. It was such a breath of fresh air watching them this year, and like knowing that when all the social justice stuff was coming up, like, okay, the Mariners are the most uniquely qualified team to handle this. I love that.
And I thought they did a really good job with it too. This is where I show I'm not as good a fan as I used to be. I'm nowhere near as aware of like the farm system and what we have coming. I know that Jerry has built up some of it, but I also know that, you know, with all the deals he's made in his short tenure, like there are guys who have gone that might turn out good other places. And, you know, like, I don't think we'll see another Chris Taylor, for example, but like you could see somebody kind of leave and then end up being a contributor elsewhere to a pretty decent team. So I kind of watch now more so like, I don't want to say casually, cause it's not casual. Like I'm still pretty involved and pretty informed, but like, I don't really think about the future too much. It wasn't until the season actually started that I thought, you know, hey, maybe this team can actually make the playoffs, and not because they're any good, but because it's just a weird, wacky year. And I watched that whole season just kind of like, what if? And then, you know, they had that last little run before the losing streak and then getting mathematically eliminated. And it was just like, that's actually a really fun way to watch. So I'm not saying I don't have expectations. I doubt that next year will be the year. And I think they're probably a couple years away. But I mean, there's bright spots on the horizon. How do you pronounce his last name? Jared
Kelnick.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like I've only ever read his name. I've never actually heard anybody talking about him. And like I hear plenty of good things about him. The Baseball America and Baseball Prospectus write-ups on the future of the team seem bright, but it seems like I really shouldn't get invested too much until a couple of years from now.
Well,
but,
that's the,
you know,
Mariner fan in you also is like, I don't want to get hurt again by these failed prospects. Who I think to Jerry's credit, I think these prospects are better than the ones that Bavesi and Jack Cerenzik acquired, but I totally get why any Mariner fan would be like, I'm not buying in until I see it at the big league level.
But let me be clear. I don't actually get hurt. I don't get hurt by them anymore. The team can no longer hurt me. I think what finally did it, we've mentioned Zach Sorensic a couple times, was I'm friends with him on Facebook and I can't remember his name now. But the report on how he kind of fudged his whole analytics background.
Yeah.
Like that did it for me, because it's like these MFers couldn't do the due diligence on on that. Like that's the one thing they have to do a good job with. And after that, I'm just like, well, I'll still love him. You know, I cried when Edgar got into the Hall of Fame. That was like, and I almost went. I had to work. I worked Sundays, so I couldn't go. And I was like, I almost was just like about to call in, but then it's like, well, everybody will know where I went because I'll have to take pictures and like do all this stuff. But yeah, like I don't get hurt by the team anymore. It's they're like you. It's same with the. I guess all Seattle sports, like none of them hurt me anymore. The Sonics are dead, so you can't hurt me there. The Seahawks lost the Super Bowl. They should have won. So, like, whatever.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty healthy relationship. Like, it doesn't do anyone any good to, like, lose your mind over every single thing that happens. Looking at you, most Seahawk fans who act like the sky is falling when the team loses one game. That is how that's to me is the separator between like, are you a Mariners fan first or a Seahawks fan first? Is how do you react to one loss? Because for Mariners fans, it's like, whatever, get them tomorrow, you know? But for the Seahawks fan, and obviously I understand the difference in schedules. Like,
yeah, obviously.
But like, there is definitely like a ingrained mindset that surrounds losing that I feel like is very different between Mariner fans and the 12th man.
Well, I would say the one thing with that is baseball is kind of random. Baseball works itself out and like schedule as well. But when the Seahawks lose, it's always like, you're like, that was such a winnable game. Like it's just one of those things. You're just like, they didn't have to lose. It's one thing. And that's the beauty of Russell Wilson. I think he's only been in like one or two games where the game wasn't within one score in the fourth quarter. Like they play close games and they're always competitive. But then, you know, it's like last year when they lost the Ravens, it's like, they didn't have to lose that game. Like, and it was fine that they lost because they ended up like, well, I guess maybe it wasn't because if they would have, they might have ended up with the winning the division otherwise. But regardless, like that, you know, it's just like that the fact that like, it's always like one player, one call or one decision. That's I understand the frustration with the 12th men. I just think I think that's a totally different conversation, you know. All the way up through high school, when we moved to Kentucky, I did not know any Seahawks fans. Like, and granted, that's a small sample size. It's kind of anecdotal, but people didn't really like the Seahawks before. These are Johnny come latelys who've never really, you know, been a fan of a bad team. I remember like staking my hopes to Rick Meyer when he got drafted, and you know, reading special sections in the Tacoma News Tribune and the Seattle Times and like getting amped up and then having those hopes crushed, or when Brian Blades was on trial for manslaughter, or you know, there's so many things. And it's like, now it's just all about football and that's all they care about. And it's just like, yeah, no, you need to like, there's a similar experience to go through with those teams. So
yeah. And I will admit, like, I'm fully Mariners since day one, obviously, but for football, I did not care about the Seahawks when I was a kid. I actually remember being a, like, very, very low-key Carolina Panthers fan because they were good at that time. Like, the Jake Delhomme, like, Stephen Davis, Deshaun Foster team was, like, very important to me, and I was crushed when they lost that Super Bowl. But I just remember thinking, like, oh, they have cool uniforms. Like, they were the fun expansion team. I wanted them to beat the Patriots. Like, that was my team for a little bit. And then when the Seahawks had their 05 run to the Super Bowl, I was like, okay, now I'm in. Now I'll be a Seahawks fan. But I was like totally one of those Johnny come latelys where I did not care about the Seahawks when I was a really little kid because they were not relevant. And like, I wanted my sports teams to be relevant like the Mariners were.
Oh, no.
Such a weird sentence now.
No, I totally understand it. I totally understand it. And speaking of that 05 run, like I literally did not watch football the next year because of how badly officiated that Super Bowl was. I don't understand. I do not understand like how a quarterback makes a tackle and they call it clipping. It does not make sense to me. And like, I'll forever be mad about that. And no one cares because people are like, well, the Steelers are a better franchise overall. They've got 6 Super Bowls. And it's like, you do realize like that the Seahawks are like so irrelevant and almost and have a legitimate case to have been 3-time Super Bowl champions, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah. It all started with that PI on your guy, Daryl Jackson, in the back of the end zone. I remember that vividly, thinking, okay, this is not going to go our way if they're calling that. And the rest is very, very sad history.
That actually came up on what did that come up on? Mina Kimes was talking about it either on Around the Horn or Highly Questionable. And she was like, she said the exact same or something to that effect. And I was just like, yeah. Like it's tough because no one cares. I if you want to go back further, like Curtis Martin never scored. I'm sure you probably don't remember that, but the Seahawks should have made the AFC. The AFC championship in 99. And Curtis Martin like was clearly did not break the plane, and they gave him a touchdown anyway. Oh, it's so frustrating. Being a Seahawks fan, like that's a whole nother level, but I'm sure you don't want to get into that today.
No, we'll bring you back for maybe field goals. We'll hit you up to do a Seahawks podcast, but we have definitely talked enough about the Seahawks for today. Wesley, this was a great conversation. Thank you so much for doing this. Before I let you go, I want to give you a chance to shout out yourself, plug anything you want, direct people to your presence on the internet, whatever you want to do. The floor is yours.
Okay, cool. Well, I would just, thanks for having me. Like, I really appreciate it. Like, this is like the highlight of my week. Like, I've had little things that have kind of gotten me through election season. I work in state politics in Pennsylvania, and like things have been really, really stressful. And everybody, I'm sure, is aware of what's happening nationally, and how Pennsylvania factors into that. So it's been very stressful the past like few months. And like, when you hit me up to do this, I was like, oh my God, this is like a lifesaver. Cause it got me thinking about the Mariners, happier times and stories I wanted to tell. Like, so that was great. I'm on Twitter. That's usually where you see my fun things. If I'm in the mood, like I actually sat through and live tweeted an entire Sonics or Seahawks game the other day. I normally don't do that. Sir Wesley the First. And that's generally where you can connect with me. And I love talking baseball with Mariners fans. Like there's that level of commiseration that we all can relate to. And it's a ton of fun. And, I really appreciate it. Really appreciate you having me on and giving me this floor. Like it was wonderful.
Yeah, no problem, man. Thank you for doing it. I would highly recommend following Wesley on Twitter. That's how I became aware of him and discovered that he was a Mariner fan working in state politics in Pennsylvania, which is what led me to be like, oh, this would be a very lively, interesting conversation. And I was proven correct. So thank you again. Thank you, everyone who listened. Please subscribe to this podcast if you feel so inclined and give us a nice rating on iTunes. We'll be back probably next week. Who knows? We have a very sporadic schedule here, but hopefully with more of these conversations as well as some stuff about the Mariners offseason, because I feel like it's that time of year where Jerry DePoto is coming out of hibernation and he will make a trade or a free agent signing or something. So stick around for that, and thanks for listening. Goodbye.
You want that over there? You want that over there? Got you.
I was up late night balling, counting up hundreds by the thousand. I was up late night ballin', countin' up hundreds by the thousand. I was up late night ballin', countin' up hundreds by the thousand. I was up late night ballin', countin' up hundreds by the thousand.
I was up late night ballin', so far from my past misfortune. No sleepin', late nights, no eatin'.